When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to In My Heart, a podcast truly about all the things in my heart and finding our freedoms. I'm your host, Heather Thompson. My next guest has been here before, and her experience as a therapist and former lead behavioral health clinician at Mount Sinai Hospital strengthened her ability to connect with people and empathetically listen to their narratives. When we lose our ability to regulate our emotions, it's often due to unprocessed grief and loss. Dr. Sylvia's techniques, such as BODY and 90 Seconds to Calm, help people to better manage the impact that stress, trauma, and loneliness can have in our lives, and to better understand how feelings of powerlessness, fear, loss of control, and the like can all be tied up into one big anxiety trigger for us. Dr. Sylvia simplifies the likes of brain health, psychotherapy, and coaching, helping us to open toward our spirituality, to ourselves, and to our purpose. Her techniques help us to better manage stress and lean into a more positive, fulfilling, and confident life. Dr. Sylvia, welcome. I'm so happy to have you back.
Thank you. I love being here, and I love the conversations that you lead, and I love how you are a thought leader in our society, in our community, and the people that you bring to this space are phenomenal. And just to be a part of this conversation feels like a wish come true. So thank you.
Oh my God. I thank you so much back at that, because I have to tell you, I think that that's one of the big problems going on right now in the world is impact.
Yes.
And, you know, the significance of someone to impact, and you don't have to have a podcast and you don't have to have a platform to do it. But people are starting to feel small, I think, in very ways like that. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on. I want to turn some complex human issues into conversations we need to be having right now. And you're the perfect person to do it with.
Absolutely. Yes.
So much in this world is happening, Doc. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got politics. We've got our own private worlds. We had COVID and still have COVID. And what's the next thing coming? You know, working from home, big changes, you know, political discord between people, between lovers, between family, between friends, you know, between human beings, things like Roe v. Wade happening, climate change, hospital overloads, on and on and on and on and on. How are we to cope?
Yes, there are so many different ways that we can do it. And I think first, start by contextualizing how much freaking change we have all been through in just 2 years. I feel like 2020 was just the start to this rapid sense of change in so many areas of our life. And I think many of us felt that we had little to no control over it. And I think what that brings out in each and every one of us is fear. Mm-hmm. And it highlights our relationship to uncertainty. When we are faced with uncertainty, that's where you're going to see behaviors that even you didn't think that you were capable of. Sometimes we act impulsively. Sometimes we might respond or react from a complex that we thought we've worked through, but then it's like, hey, I'm back. Sometimes we might show up in a way that we surprise ourselves in a positive way. But uncertainty has, I think, such a significant impact on us collectively and individually. And you know, also certainty is a human need. And when we don't have it, you are sure to see yourself and others are going to respond in ways that are surprising.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad that you said that, because the way that we process fear, yes, the way that we process uncertainty, the yes, way that we process things that we can't control, like a death or an election, you feel like you can't control it. You can't yep, control what's happening to you. How do we as human beings let some of those things pass through us and know what's important to hold on to, what we can actually make a significant change in or take action on, and what we have to just kind of chalk up to this is the human experience?
Yes, Yes. Well, my bias as a therapist, someone who's trained as a systemic thinker and also believes that language has such an impact on our psyche and the way that we see the world. And my first answer is, let's name it. Let's name it. This is fear.
Yes.
Name the freaking emotion.
Yes.
My language. This is fucking fear.
Yes.
This is fear. This is uncertainty. If we can give it a name, then we change our relationship to it. Because sometimes when we're not able to name it, it can feel like this thing that's bigger than us. We can internalize it. It can feel, you know, like a, I don't know, like this unseen force that feels terrifying. If you can name it, that separates you from it, and then you have much more flexibility to move around it and to relate to it.
Yeah.
So name it. And then number two, let's broaden the context. What are six human needs that affect all of our behaviors? Well, according to Tony Robbins, who also borrowed a little bit from the Maslow theory, he says that we have six human needs that affect all of our behaviors. So the first need that we have as humans is we have a need for certainty. Number two, we have a need for variety. As much as we need certainty, we need uncertainty. We need to let loose. We need to break the norm. We need to do something different. Number three, significance. Mm-hmm. We need to feel that we matter. We need to feel that our voice matters. We need to feel that we're heard. We need to feel in some way that we're important. Maybe not important. Maybe that's too big of a word for some people.
But needed.
Yeah, needed. And number four, it kind of piggybacks on feeling needed. We have a need for love and connection. Mm-hmm. If we don't feel needed, it's hard to feel a sense of connection and love. So we as human beings, especially the way our brain is wired, the limbic system, we are wired for connection. Mm-hmm. And number five, growth. We need to grow. We need to learn. You see it in animals. If you have a dog that isn't playing, that isn't going out, and you leave that dog unattended, they start to feel bored. They start to feel depressed. And other animals will show it as well. So if an animal is not growing through play and interaction and learning, they tend to feel down. We as humans have the same response to non-growth. If we feel stuck in our lives, we often start to experience anxiety and depression, and we overthink, or we lose all motivation. So growth is such an integral part to us being humans, and the brain needs it. We need positive and negative stress. That's how our brain is wired for growth.
And continues to develop, because I do notice in older people, when they stop experiencing new things, all they talk about is the past.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And then number six, we have a need for contribution. Mm. People who experience that they're able to give back, even if it's giving back through acts of kindness, even if it's giving back through a smile and acknowledging another person's presence, that helps a person feel good. Once a person feels that they are not able to contribute back to society, back to their family, back to something, they start to feel worthless. Mm-hmm. They start to feel like they don't have a purpose. And that can spiral into depression and anxiety and a whole other slew of mental health symptoms. But contribution is really important. And I think with all of the world events that have been going on, it's triggering all of our human needs.
Yes.
But the one that stands out to me the most is significance.
Yeah.
And also uncertainty. Mm-hmm. All of the events that you mentioned before are filled with uncertainty.
Yeah.
How long is this thing going to last? Something that we got used to as something that was legally written has now just been undone. And how long is that going to happen? And how many people is that going to affect? And what if this and what if that? And our mind starts to go in all these different areas. And when you feel, let's say, small or insignificant, that you may not have the power, financial power, political power, physical presence, whatever, to make a difference, that level of uncertainty can feel absolutely overbearing and overwhelming. And then it could really start to show up in the way we behave, the way we relate to others, and the way we relate to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So let's name it. This is uncertainty. This is fear. This is me feeling insignificant. These are my human needs. I need to feel significant. I need some level of certainty or some sense of support right now just to acknowledge my presence and this difficulty that I'm going through right now.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because I think that when we talk about insignificance, oftentimes it stems from this one, maybe not fear, but helplessness.
Oh God.
Right.
Yes.
So I think, you know, I want to go back to fear because I want to talk about that and how to identify it, because, like, you know, sometimes people can't identify that they're afraid. I think that's one that's very hard to identify. A little easier to identify. I feel helpless. I feel insignificant. I feel small. I feel afraid. Well, I'm not really afraid, but I'm 52 years old. Am I afraid of Roe v. Wade for myself, that I won't be able to get an abortion? No, it doesn't attack me personally. I am afraid for what it means for women. Absolutely. I'm afraid because I have a 15-year-old daughter. I'm afraid because I know people are going to die. And I feel helpless because what I thought was written rule has been completely overturned. And how does Heather Thompson affect that? And how do I make a difference? How do I make a change so that nobody has to die, so that nobody has to suffer, so that everybody has the right to their own body? I'm just bringing that one up because It's like, you know, that's how I feel about that one. You know what I mean? So I make sure when I make a post, it's not just complaining or ranting. There's something underneath it to tell people where to go or where to find. I'm not just adding to the noise out there. Talk to me about, I'm going to get to fear, but talk to me about that helplessness. Talk to me about that significance to impact.
Absolutely. I think helplessness is a universal human vulnerability. Everyone on this planet will at least once in their life feel some sense of helplessness. Mm-hmm. And that will get us at our core because it's a vulnerability that is universal. And Often what we think is so personal is most universal. And so helplessness, I think, It can affect us in so many different ways. But one thing that I have observed, whether someone who has experienced helplessness long-term or maybe just sporadically, it can often lead to a phenomenon called learned helplessness. Mm. Learned helplessness is something I think is really important to talk about because it is a learned behavior that we learn out of response to something that we think we can't help or change. So it's a protective mechanism. However, if we don't name learned helplessness, we may stay in that vicious cycle of helplessness and not advocate for change. And then basically stay in a level of impotence as if we don't have the power or significance to make a change. And I think it was Margaret Mead who said, never underestimate the power of a small group of like-minded individuals who can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has.
Yes.
So if we can acknowledge helplessness as a vulnerability, honor it, we can't change it into something that it's not, acknowledge that it can lead to learned helplessness, which is basically, learned helplessness is when someone gets so used to feeling insignificant, or let's say they've been conditioned to trauma or some level of crisis where they felt little to no change in that situation. They felt utterly helpless. They then tend to condition themselves. Well, I guess this is the way it's always going to be. Damned if I do, damned if I don't. What's the point of even trying when it doesn't even make a difference?
Right.
That level of learned helplessness is soul crushing.
Yes. Soul crushing.
Soul crushing. So if we can name it and catch ourselves when we fall into it, this is learned helplessness.
Yes.
Own it. This is my helplessness. Own it, name it, and then you shift your relationship to it. Okay, this is learned helplessness, but what is one thing I can do differently? What's one thing I can do to challenge myself that I am an agent for change? That even as one person, I can make an impact with my voice, and in a group of like-minded individuals together, collectively in community, we can make a difference. We can contribute to growth and contribution, right? In our own society. So I think it's really important. And I think similar to healing was not designed to be done alone. Healing was meant to be done in community. Yes. Change was meant to be done in community.
Everything wasn't it? Because the only thing that we do alone is we are born and we die right alone. The rest of the time we need people. I love when people get so angry. My kids are like, I just want to be alone. I'm like, okay, maybe for a minute. But if you stay alone forever, you'll die. We need people.
Yes.
And we need to, and you know, there's also another saying that one of the biggest problems in life is other people. Right. So how do we connect and learn to live with other people that have differing thoughts in us, that frustrate us, that maybe even push us towards some of those triggers we have, feelings of helplessness or insignificance, that sort of thing. And one of the things that I have been practicing on my own, and it only comes through my age and wisdom. And that's the only thing that I wish that I could give people as a gift is the gift of aging.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And the wisdom that you get from it.
Yep.
Because I now know that every challenge, I believe for myself, that every challenge is that's thrown at me, all of those feelings that I feel, those are all tests for my soul and for myself. Right. And if I recognize it as that, and what she said, I name it, right? This is fear. This is imbalance. This is insignificance I'm feeling. When you own it, when you name it and you call it that, then I automatically get introspective.
Yes.
About why do I feel this way? Like, there's a saying that if I was talking to you and you said something to me that triggered me, you're not responsible for the way I feel. I have to understand those emotions. Now, yeah, if you're around someone who's always a jerk and, you know, calls you nasty names every time he sees you, your choice is what? To not hang out with that person anymore, right? We can empower ourselves to make change, even though we fear change, it's inevitable. Nothing ever stays the same, nothing. So—
And if we don't want it to, because if we don't change, we don't adapt—
Stagnant, we die. So all of this that happens is natural occurrence in life, right? But we get stuck in these things and it won't pass through us.
Yes.
You know, I've got an issue with my sister. It won't pass through me. I know the only way for me to heal it is to forgive her. That's a lot easier said than done.
Like
the hardest work I think I'll ever do. But if I get through that, because my sister didn't hurt me because she wanted to hurt me, it's because of other things that are going on in her life that have nothing to do with me and yeah. things that are her experience, right? So when we break down, I think, the issues, right? Like, that's what I'm trying to get at. Like, teach us how to, one, identify what it is, because it's hard enough to just identify it. And then two, how do you get introspective about the reality is that even death isn't a big deal because that's part of life. Nothing really is such an entire big deal that we can't work through it. Right, Doc?
Yes. Yes. Well, so here's my 3-step process. Name it and unshame it, whatever it is. If we're yes. going to unshame loneliness, if we're going to unshame uncertainty, if we're going to unshame victimhood, if we're going to unshame trauma, whatever it is, name it so you can start to unshame it. Number two, mm-hmm. let's find the tools within to do the work. Everybody's work is going to look a little bit different. Now, we have universal themes. As I said earlier, what seems most personal is often most universal. So let's say an experience of betrayal. Let's name it. This is betrayal. Regardless of other people's stories or interpretations of whatever they think it is, your reality, if it felt like betrayal, let's name it. This is betrayal.
Yeah.
Number two, let's discover the tools within. I think one tool, you know, is breath work, but another tool is validation, self-validation. And this is going to tie in for the need for significance. Self-validation has been difficult for me to learn because I think I started life as a people pleaser. I was always more concerned on what other people would think or say. And I tried to, survive my own family system through people pleasing, or AKA fawning, which is basically the avoidance of criticism, disapproval, and conflict.
Yes.
And so that can lead to a whole other, you know, slew of behaviors. But let's go back to the tool of self-validation. I think the most powerful thing that you can say to yourself to self-validate what the pain that you went through in that betrayal is to say this: it makes sense that I would feel this way. It makes sense that I feel angry. It makes sense that I feel resentful. It makes sense that I feel let down. Whatever it is, it makes sense, even if the other person doesn't agree with it.
Right.
Because if you can start with "it makes sense," then you give yourself permission to feel that thing that maybe you still don't want to feel. And it validates the impact of that event on your life to your own personal narrative. Now, we don't want to fall into victimhood and say, well, this thing happened and because of this, I'll never be like this. And because of you, this will la, 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 la. No, 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 no. It makes sense that I feel angry about this. Okay. And then what that can help you do is it unburdens yourself and that other person from that continual cycle of the blame and shame game mm-hmm. that often doesn't lead to change. And when you said something so powerful earlier, when you own it, Because it's not just naming it, it's owning it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is my wound. I felt betrayed. And it makes sense that I would feel this way. And I'm going to own it that this was a part of my narrative. And this is where you can shift learned helplessness into, I would say, self-compassion, courage, change. You own that part. And then you, as you own that part, you are less inclined to project it onto others to do the work for you. You say, excuse my language, I'm going to fucking do the work now. I own this shit. I've named it. I've brought some self-validation to it, and now I'm going to do the work. And that work can look like many different ways. For me, I believe it's getting in touch with the inner child. Get in touch with this, the age you were when that sense of betrayal happened. Get in touch with that age that you were where you felt so helpless to the adults, to the family system, to the cultural system, to the structural systems, whatever age you were, to that earliest memory or that defining moment, you own it. And you own the work that is required.
Yes.
So you get curious. What was that defining moment? What message did I tell myself about myself? What was the problem? How can I maybe now start to externalize the problem instead of internalizing it?
Yes.
The problem. The problem was the fucking problem. Yes. You know? Excuse my language.
No. So true.
So the more you can externalize it, you get more curious about it, and you're unburdening yourself and the other people that we keep constellated. And so another tool that I like to use is I look at the phenomenon of triangulation. I think when we experience uncertainty in our life and we ourselves feel insignificant, what happens is we'll triangulate another person. So what is triangulation? Two people experience a level of tension, uncertainty. You feel like that other person doesn't understand you. You feel blamed or shamed or whatever it is. There's a lot of tension. Because the intensity is so extreme and too much to handle, we're not equipped or wired to deal with that, we pull in a third person. Mm-hmm. So if two best friends get in a fight, one person's going to call a third friend and say, did you hear what so-and-so said or did to me, blah, blah, blah. We do it in our family systems. Mm-hmm. Two sisters experience tension because maybe the mother was triangulating them without them even knowing it.
Right.
Or two sisters experiencing a lot of tension. Each sister might pull in their significant other. Can you believe what my sister said or did to me? We do it naturally for what? To manage our uncertainty. We do it to stabilize the unit. We do it to manage our own anxiety. What's our anxiety caused? Or how is our anxiety caused? It's in our relationship to uncertainty. Because we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know the outcome. So we'll pull in that third person. So here is a total twist to managing triangulation in our anxiety. Instead of constellating that pain and shame and blame and all the other heavy emotions that come with it, let's look at the triangle and name the three people involved. You, your sister, and perhaps your mom. Mm-hmm. You acknowledge each person in this triangle. And also you acknowledge the pain that each person has experienced in their own narrative and in their own life and in their own position of the story. My sister has experienced her pain. My mother has experienced her pain, and so have I. You can't do the work for your mother, and you can't do the work for your sister. You can only do it for yourself. But I think part of the work is acknowledging the collective pain, mm-hmm. the collective pain that we are in as a society, as a global community, but also in our family system. But then you self-validate the pain that you've been in. And then, so here's my spiritual twist. You acknowledge the pain in each person's own narrative. You acknowledge that you cannot do the work for them. So you release yourself from that enmeshment. And then you go to yourself. And that's when you self-validate. It makes sense that I've experienced this pain. It makes sense that I have felt this way and that way. And in this moment, I consciously choose to release my physical, emotional, and spiritual bodies, plural, from all the pain that I've experienced and inherited from my family system. You can thank the pain for the transformation perhaps that it has led you to. And then you can imagine releasing that pain into whatever is significant to you. Me, I release it into the purest form of peace and love. Mm-hmm. I imagine releasing all that pain to this incredible source energy, God, the universe, whatever name you want to call it. And you allow your imagination to imagine that all that pain is being transmuted back into the purest form of love and peace. And then what you release, be sure and clear and and purposeful of what you want to bring back in. So me specifically, I encourage you to ask for that purest form of peace and love to come into your physical, emotional, spiritual, and mental bodies so that that purest form of peace and love can help every molecule of your body vibrate now at that vibrational force field of peace and love. And that is a tool that you can do to help manage your pain. Honor the pain, acknowledge the pain, release the pain, and you're burdening yourself from it and unburdening the other two people in the triangle.
That's right. I mean, it's beautiful. It's unbelievably beautiful. What it all comes down to, but extremely hard. Let me just finish the sentence before I move on. Almost impossible sometimes, right? I mean, and allow that this is hard work. I mean, I think that's what sometimes people think when we talk about love and peace and joy, it takes a long, hard fucking road to get there. Yes. And so, but what in the end, what matters entirely is love.
Yes.
Entirely. If you cannot look at an individual, a human being, another human being, no matter what, in some sort of love, right? Giving them some sort of space that you can give them love, you will never ever heal. And what will happen is you will hurt yourself. You will grow what I call a cancer inside yourself by closing your heart.
Yes.
Because an open heart will love. A closed heart shuts itself off because it wants to protect itself, right?
Yes.
Protection can mean loneliness. Protecting of yourself can mean closing yourself off, right?
Yes.
So one of the things I learned, one of the guys I listened to, Michael Singer, he's got a book. He's written a few books. Untethered Soul is one of his books, and Living the Untethered Life.
Yeah.
I like how he breaks it down for people. You know, he breaks it down in the same way that you do. And one of the scenarios he gives me in one of his books, The Untethered Soul, is if you had a thorn sticking in your arm and it was hitting a tendon, right? You've got two options. You can either protect the thorn so it doesn't hit anything and never hits that tendon because it's so painful, or you can remove it.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with our emotions. What we do as human beings, we tend to keep the thorn in and protect it. Yeah. And we cut the woods around us so that the branches don't hit the thorn, or we have to sleep a certain way, maybe not with a partner because they're going to hit the thorn. Like whatever it is that we wound up as humans protecting those things that bring us fear, uncertainty, shame, pain, anything like that, instead of actually removing it.
Yeah.
And it sounded beautiful, and it didn't sound easy. It sounded complicated, but it sounded almost like we can reach that point. The only way to reach that point is to begin with a point like I do with my sister. I love my sister. I love my sister, but she hurt me beyond, you know, words. So, but I still love her. So what I've been working on doing is not what she did, the victim. I've removed myself, or am working at removing myself from the victim role, because if we don't, what do? We stay in that role. Yes. And my thought process is what she did to me, what she did to me, what she did to me, what she did to me. If I remove myself as the victim and I look holistically at my sister as a person, at myself as a person, at my mother as a person, the only thread here is love.
Yeah.
And so what does it mean? Does it mean I have to invite her for Christmas this, you know? No. But without forgiving her, I will never free myself, and I will never free my mom.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I need to do that. So that's just one little example that I can, you know, notably talk about in my life. But people get stuck in death, right? Yeah. Losing someone that is uncontrollable. We cannot get that person back. Mm-hmm. But I like to tell people they never went anywhere. They're with mm-hmm. you forever and always. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some of these ways that we can open our hearts to love, whether you've been hurt by someone, whether you feel insignificant. I mean, we're all hurt by someone in some way.
Yep.
You know, I shouldn't name the five, like, you know, the obvious things that come through your doors all day long. But, you know, Tony did, there are six needs that we have. What are some of the commonalities in you know, like maybe, is there any commonality in an issue that you see? Like a lot of people are stuck in the victim. Talk to us a little bit about that, Doc, so we can identify ourselves in here.
Number one commonality is pain. Pain. We are all managing pain in the best way that we can. Some manage their pain through addiction. Some manage their pain through becoming extremely spiritual and delving into the worlds of well-being. Some manage their pain through therapy. Some manage their pain through denial. Mm-hmm. Pain is a universal human experience. Right. And pain is a transcendent function for the psyche. And to me personally, I'm just going to speak from my own personal experience. There is no way to forgiveness or to love or all these other spiritual understandings of what we're talking about if you don't name, excuse my language, the goddamn pain.
Right.
If you don't name the overwhelming, dark, yeah, heavy emotion that goes back to pain, if you don't name it, if you skip that process and you try to get to, I just want to forgive and love, it's not going to work.
Nope.
It's not going to work. I don't want to over-spiritualize psychology. I don't want to over-spiritualize the healing process. It does require an intentional and purposeful process of naming the pain, and that's going to look different. And I think naming the uncomfortable emotions, name the anger, name the sadness, name the hurt. And if you skip that process because you don't want to feel it, because most of us want to avoid the pain, most likely the change is not going to happen.
Yep.
And so I think here's the other thing. It's important to create a support network to name the pain, to name it, deal with it so that you can heal it. I think there's a three-step process by another therapist. I think she calls it name. You got to name it to deal with it, to heal it. Mine is name it, discover the tools within. And then number three, which is so important, build community. But it's really hard to build community if you're still not able to name it and you don't have the tools to connect within to start the work. So I think creating that solid support system, a therapist, a healer, maybe it's a group of friends that you really can trust. So let's go back to the pain. This commonality, I think it's really important to also name when you are in the process of trying to forgive someone that feels very difficult, or you're in the process of maybe getting triggered and you go back to your old wounds or old archetypes of the victim or the orphan or whatever it is. I think if you can just pause for a second and acknowledge the pain in yourself and that other person, it can also help you look at the person a little bit differently. Because me personally, I've been dealing with my own pain in my relationship with my father and my father wound. My father and I, we've been very close my entire life. But now as an adult, I'm 43 years old, I realized part of our closeness was an unhealthy enmeshed relationship. Mm-hmm. And he said something that was so painful to me a year ago that just kind of broke me in a way, but it needed to break a part of me that I think was a burden. It was a role that I was carrying. I was in a way acting as my father's therapist. I was in a way putting my father on this pedestal because I needed to see him in this certain way because I didn't want to feel orphaned.
Right.
And when I saw my dad in this way that I'd never seen him before as a human, as flawed, as somebody that was being angry and mean, and it was directed towards me, I saw him in a different way. And I got stuck for a second in my own victimhood and my own, oh my gosh, how could you do that to me? You know, I've done everything to help you, to be the good daughter, to I'm never enough. And blah, all of that, I went through it. I needed to play the tape again. However, where I want to get to is it took me a year finally to get to this place that I was able to acknowledge my father's pain because I had to feel my pain first.
Yes.
I had to feel my hurt. I had to name it. I went out and sought the tools to find it, to feel it, to heal it. I got into generational, family constellation work. I got a new therapist who's skilled at internal family systems. I really, really, really did the work.
Yes.
And then a week ago, I called my dad and I said, Dad, we were talking about surface stuff. And at the very end, I said, listen, just want to ask you very open and personal question. And you don't have to answer this. And if you want to talk about it later, I understand. What were you so angry about with your own mom? What happened? What was that stuff that you were caring all about? And he took a moment and he shared with me some deeply personal stuff about how he felt really hurt in his relationship to his mom. And it was the first time that I could really see his hurt and pain, because before it was more expressed from a narcissistic kind of flavorful approach, but this was him being vulnerable and him naming his own pain. And then I saw my father as a human, as a child that's been carrying all this pain and that I've just been kind of constellated yes. in. And that in the last week has helped me break free.
Yes.
This stuff that I've been carrying for so
yes.
long. And
oh
building
God.
A community with you and other people that we can talk about this too is another level to doing this work and taking it to the next level to find yeah. love and connection. And
so beautiful. Whether it's for a push in a positive direction or a way to dig in and find your inner frequency, Masterclass is a pathway into subjects and people that you choose because they connect with you. Masterclass offers world-class instructors at the top of their fields. Learn how to write a screenplay or to make an egg worthy of a Michelin star rating. With Masterclass, you can learn from the world's best minds anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace. Each class is broken out into individual video lessons around 10 minutes long and are supported by downloadable materials like class guides and recipes. Dive in with neuroscience professor Matthew Walker to better understand the science of sleep. Learn as four women's rights activists discuss the feminist movement. Listen to Gloria Steinem and the ways you can join the fight for equality. With over 150 classes from a range of world-class instructors, that thing you've always wanted to do is closer than you think. I love hanging out in my kitchen with Gordon Ramsay in cinema quality classes that give me personal access to my favorite renowned instructor. With Gordon, I learned so much of the why he takes my cooking to the next level. And I recently checked out James Suckling's Appreciation of Wine, an experience behind each bottle by region and time. I highly recommend you check it out. Get unlimited access to every class, and as an In My Heart listener, you get 15% off an annual membership. Go to masterclass.com/inmyheart now. That's masterclass.com/inmyheart for 15% off Masterclass. Now back to my show. When we start to take the words me out of the equation, what they did to me, what happened to me, and we take ourselves out of the receiving place and we look into where the other person stands, there's always pain on their side, right? And so you've got to look at that in love, even something simple like your spouse. Like I'll talk about my husband for a second, Jonathan. There's a couple of things that he does that annoy the shit out of me. It just annoys me to no end, right?
Yep.
And so, and by the way, they're the same exact things that annoyed me like the day I met him. You know what I mean? Like nothing's going to change. You know, John has ADHD, so he sometimes will lose this train of thought. And oftentimes when I'm in the middle of a story, he'll leave the room. He'll just like walk away. And I'm like, where are you going? And he's like, oh, I wanted to grab my toothbrush. You know, something hits his head and he's like, oh, I want to make sure I don't forget my toothbrush or something. And he'll leave in the middle of a conversation. And I used to let it make such a big problem. Oh, and I would go, there he goes again. And I would stand in the room by myself and talk to myself, you know, and I would just build up this anger. And it took me a couple years of therapy. Now when he does it, I laugh. Like, do you know how long it took me to do that? And by the way, not every time, but I changed my own perspective on I used to think like, how rude. What I'm saying clearly isn't important enough. Right. But when I took me out of the conversation, it's like, that's how his mind thinks. He can't even control that pinball game if he tried, you know, and it's like ding, 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 ding. And John's, you know, he goes to where the noise is, you know, or food.
But your story reminds me again, we have that need to feel significant. I'm telling you the story that's important to me. And it's important that you hear me. And when the person walks away, it's like, wait, was what I was saying wasn't important? And it's so funny because I did almost the same thing to my husband yesterday, but I was the person who walked away. We were folding laundry together. He was talking about something and I heard my son need something. I walked away, helped my son, came back, went to the refrigerator. He was like,
we were talking.
So I sang a parody song, ADHD.
Yes, exactly. But so, I mean, those are two perfect examples that could have like literally ended in divorce. Like literally. Yes. Like, and I think that's what happens is we feel this certain sort of way and we stay stuck in the one perspective.
Yeah.
And that one perspective is like a treadmill. It's like sowing the garden. It's the same line of seeds all the time. And the muscle, the brain works to that memory. And that's what I felt for, you know, really 17 years of our marriage, until finally I was like, you walk away all the time. You don't have, you know, I'm not important. What I'm saying isn't important to you. And he's like, are you kidding me? He's like, my mind is like, you know what I mean? He was like, I wish I could stay, you know what I mean? More focused. So now John is doing work on focus because he, it's important to him that he doesn't walk out of the room on people.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So everybody has to name it, own it, and then work at it. Yes. Just because you recognize it doesn't mean it goes away.
Yes. You know? And I think like in that situation too, like owning, okay, my mind has a tendency to open up a lot of browsers at the same time. And at the same time, I own it. And I'm going to do my best to redirect my focus back to whatever that thing is. Same thing with my husband. I tell him, I said, you know, my brain is wired differently than yours. Yes. It's ADHD. Don't take it personal. Yep. I wish I had a brain like you that I could just follow through on that one task. And, but then I really try to follow through on some certain tasks that we're with to show him, hey, I am making an effort. I'm owning it. I'm doing my part in it so that we don't have to keep this whole game.
Totally. Now I'm going to have important. Yes, totally. Now what happens is when he starts to walk, I go, you're walking away. He goes, I'm walking away.
Yeah.
And then he really wants to hear what I have to say. He loves me. Yeah. But, you know, that was an issue in our marriage, which was turning into a problem, and which is a silly problem if you flip the perspective. So we can let these problems, like you said, you know, become our own personal pocketbook, you know what I mean? And then it leads to other, you know, now the doctor can take over because then it leads to other behavioral issues, closing off, like you said, playing the victim or helplessness.
Yes.
So we have to be honest with what we feel. And the validation thing I want to say too, because that's a change. When we were, you know, I'm about 10 years older than you, but like my generation, you know, your generation probably had it maybe just 10 years less than me, but I was always heard about, well, I walked to school with no shoes in the blasted winter. You know what I mean? Like you try to do that to my kids' age. They don't want to hear about my struggles. They're like, please stop talking about the old days. Like you're like, you know, you were had a chuck wagon or something, mom. You know what I mean? And what my learned behavior when they were in pain or struggling was to automatically tell them how bad everybody else had it. That was how I was trained. That was what I was told. Yep. Well, you got a roof over your head and food on your plate. So what are you complaining about? You know what I mean? You got two legs and you got two eyes and, you know, what are you complaining about? And with all of my son's health issues, I found myself as a younger parent doing that, comparing him to, you know, a child way less fortunate, comparing him to a child who had no arms and legs or something, you know, crazy where Jack's had a lot of issues. And I learned, thank God, before his teenage years hit, that that was wrong. That wasn't good. I wasn't validating him at all. I was telling him to tough it up, forget your feelings, and look how bad other people have it. Yeah. And that's not healthy, right?
And I would even reframe it not as wrong. It was a learned behavior that you learned from the generations behind you.
Right.
We inherit emotions from previous generations. We inherit patterns. That pattern was a survival instinct to your mother's generation and to your grandparents' generation. Going through World War II, going through the Great Depression, that was a way of survival. And I think comparison is an adaptive behavior that we learn to do to manage what? Uncertainty.
Yeah.
When we feel uncertain about something, well, if we're helpless, well, if I just compare it to this, it gives me some sense of power.
Right.
It may not be the most effective approach. And I think here's the beautiful thing about behavior. We can reteach ourselves to learn behavior. So I think any behavior that might be maladaptive or is not leading to the outcome or the repair that you want, I think acknowledging it, naming it, and then replace that behavior with a different behavior. It's like, neuroscience, right? Our brains are extremely adaptable and malleable. And with neuroplasticity, you can think a new thought to train your brain. I was like, it can't be that simple. You just think a new thought. You think a new thought. You rethink that thought. You keep practicing to that new thought until you believe it. And once you believe it, it then becomes a behavior and a character trait.
Yes.
So just going back to, I think, comparison, I think just to name it as a maladaptive behavior to manage uncertainty, if we can acknowledge it usually leads to more pain, then what else can we do instead of compare? Let's replace it with validation.
Yes.
Right? it must be really uncomfortable. I would actually, whatever word the person is using to describe their experience, mirror it back.
Yeah.
So if your son is saying this thing,
it's not really fair.
Not fair. Mm-hmm. You know what? I hear this really unfair from you. From, you know, given everything that you've just told me, it makes sense that you would think it's unfair. You don't have to agree with that person's perspective of it being unfair. However, you can validate the words they shared with you and their story. After yes. everything that you just told me, it makes sense that you would think it's unfair. Mm-hmm. And so just to validate, I think is not only healing, but offers another way to manage uncertainty.
Yes. Yes.
And even in this moment right now that you think it's unfair and you don't know what's going to happen, it makes sense that you would feel this way.
And then what I've been working on too is that perspective shift, right? So I validate and then I say to him, but I want to think about, we've been thinking about a lot of the bad situations here. You know, you're going to have to be on a long round of antibiotics. You're going to have to do this. You're going to have to do this, but we have a diagnosis. We know what the problem is. We can fix it. It's just going to be more of a marathon than a sprint, Jaxie, but we can fix it. So like I try to then flip the perspective to get that muscle just from what I've learned, you know, about, you know, the malleability of the brain to try to get him to start thinking a little bit more positively over this long journey. That's going to be difficult and challenging, but to walk into it with some optimism that like, this sucks, but we got it.
Yeah.
We can handle it.
Or let's entertain the other side of it. So I believe that the world is dialectical, that two opposites can exist at the same time and both be true. It can be a long road that's challenging and adventurous. It can be a long road that's difficult and enlightening. It can be a long road that, excuse my language, we don't know what the fuck we're doing. Yeah. However, we're going to learn new ways and discover parts of yourself and strengths that we don't know now, but that we're going to find out together.
And that's the spiritual side too, Doc, because that is life. That is the human life experience that we ebb and we flow and we falter and we fail, but we challenge and we move on and we get through this life, hopefully with some evolution in our pocket.
Yes. Yes.
And if I make up with my sister, she won't be my husband in the next life. That's very motivating.
Yes. And here's just one thing I want to add about the evolution. One thing I love about the Z generation and this next evolution of human minds and spirits is that they're teaching us life is about fun. This whole healing thing doesn't have to be filled with pain and I have to cry all my feelings and I have to stay in this like burdensome, heavy, some place of processing. We can have fun in the process. We can have fun in the expression of ourselves. We can have fun in the process of healing our pain. And I think there is a certain vibration of joy that we can tap into that I think the Z generation are trying to remind us of, that in joy, there can be healing, that in the vibration of joy, we can manage our uncertainty in probably a more effective way. So I just wanted to say thank you, Z Generation, for reminding us of the power of joy and having fun, because we need that.
Yes. And through it, you find connection.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's like the joy, because like I'm gonna give some shout out to my friend Amparo. So Amparo's a new friend of mine. But we have all of these likenesses. Like we had the same issue with our mom. We had the same issue with our sister. We had like all of these likenesses. And because of the pain that we've endured and because of some of the work that we've both done, we have found such community in each other.
Oh, wow.
That like when I have a challenge, you know, I was dealing with my neighbors on some land stuff and I was getting so frustrated. Yeah. And like, I was on a hike with Amparo, great to get in nature. I'm going to always tout that one. We were on a hike and I almost didn't go on the hike. Cause I was like, I don't want to be such a downer for her. I've got all this stuff on my mind. Then I'm like, no, I'm going on the hike. And we talked on this hike and we talked it through. And I left readied to have this conversation with my neighbor in a much better way than I would have if I didn't speak to Amparo. And ultimately I performed better. I was a better person. I was a better neighbor. I got what I wanted. You know what I mean? Instead of fighting. And I was mad and I was going to go at it like, all right, this is enough already here. But I didn't. I switched the narrative through the help of a friend. Through her work that she's done on herself, she was able to be like, hey, I think I know what to do here.
Yes.
And she did.
And I think that's learning how to embrace our own sense of helplessness in a different way that doesn't burden ourselves. I think if we can own our helplessness, I don't know what to do. I'm going to reach out to a friend. I'm going to go on that hike. I'm going to talk about it. And allowing, giving yourself permission to not know, I think is extraordinary. And healing. And then allowing that other friend, whoever it is, to offer a suggestion or just giving them that space to hear you is also extraordinarily healing.
Yes.
And I think that is a great story to inspire all of us to challenge our own sense of helplessness from a different approach rather than I'm going to do it all on my own. I'm not going to burden others. No, I'm going to share my story with someone else and I'm going to allow myself to not know. And I think that's where we find strength in our own vulnerabilities and connection, as you said.
100%. Because anything that you're going to go into that's difficult or any challenge that you're going to now say, okay, maybe after this podcast, you're like, I got a few things I need to be introspective about. I have a few things to work on. The one thing that I would counsel that I've learned myself is always look from a different perspective. Just because you think the answer, because I'm known for this, the answers pop in my head really fast. And I always say, like, if I don't know it really fast, I probably won't know the answer. Now, when I know it really fast, I force myself to take another thought.
Yes.
Think about it another way, take a different perspective. And it's usually of the person that I'm going to meet or the person I'm having the challenge with, like really trying to put yourself in their shoes, but also go at it where, instead of like, what I need out of this is the following, you know, I want to help us get to a point where we can finalize this. You know, it's just like different, like you say, at the very beginning of this podcast, words matter. Absolutely. And if there's nothing we learned, hello, in this decade, it should be that one. Okay. That words really matter and they affect people in great ways. They affect their lives and they affect their personas and they affect the choices that they make. And our words really count. And so they can be wonderful and life-changing, or they can be horrible and life-altering. You know what I mean? So what do you think about the perspective shift?
I have a tool to offer. It's called the TOM tool, T-O-M. So you catch yourself with a certain thought. Whatever that thought is, you observe it. Then you think of the exact opposite of that thought. And you entertain that thought. You observe it. And then the M is the middle thought. So you have the original thought, the opposite thought for O, and M, the middle thought. I think giving yourself that perspective shift at their different angles, and the middle thought is a synthesis of these extremes. And it's a wonderful way to manage intense emotions. It's a wonderful way also to manage our own extreme thoughts. And I think it gives us, in the process of thinking, you know, TOM, the first thought, the opposite in the middle, it gives you a little bit time to shift perspective each time you are, you know, using the tool. And it allows yourself to have that dialectical approach to life.
Yeah.
It's validating the opposites and synthesizing the both, so that perhaps your approach or your follow through, your behavior is going to come from the wise mind as opposed to these extreme opposites.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, I love the Tom. I need to think a little bit more about the Tom. Yeah. And, you know, breathing exercises, you know, I follow Dr. Andrew Weil, MD, and he's got amazing breathing exercises and things like that. I think that we need to take a little bit more time on the importance of our feeling, what we feel, how we feel, what our triggers are, how we react to something, especially after all we've been through. If we can't just take a little bit of time right now to just self-respect, you know, like for introspection or to pause for a second before we jump in. And there's a lot of anger going on, even when you're, I mean, I want you guys that are listening to use this even for a political conversation with a best friend or a family member or someone who has very differing thoughts than you. You don't have to have hate for someone who has different thoughts than you. A lot of times what it takes is a little bit of education. You know, for especially those common sense things, like how could you not see it the way I see it, right? It could have to do with the way they were brought up, those ingrained behaviors that they were taught. There's all different types of way. My mom, I'll be honest, you know, had a different opinion about kneeling at the NFL at the beginning. You know, as from her generation, she didn't understand Colin Kaepernick at all until I explained him to her. And I gave her some articles to read because she was listening to the media and not actually forming her own opinion through her own fact finding. She was making an opinion that she had heard and generationally she thought made sense. But when I explained to her why he kneeled, where he got the actual idea to do it, and that it was an honorarium, it changed her perspective completely. And she said, oh my God, I'm so glad I knew that. So that is what we all face, that challenge now with media today, and finding our own path and finding our own opinion. And if we are concerned about something, leaning into the work to understand where the community of like-minded people are, that we as a small group can enact the change that we believe needs to happen.
Yes. And in the word belief is the word lie, L-I-E. Mm-hmm. These are limited ideas that we've entertained. I think it's important also to contextualize in every person's belief system, there are generations of limited ideas that they have entertained and passed down and re-entertained. And I believe collectively we are in a point of history and human evolution where we are all being called to challenge these limited ideas that we've entertained in our own family systems, collectively as a society, collectively as a global community. And this really is a time for big change, big shifts. And I think in the midst of this uncertainty, we can lean back to the tools that work for us. And that could be the breath work, that can be the TOM skill, that can be just acknowledging, self-validating your own feelings, whether, you know, especially the difficult ones. Let's really self-validate the ones that we don't like talking about.
Right.
Just give yourself permission to feel the way that you feel, as opposed mm-hmm. to being constantly invalidated. And I think when you discover these tools within, then you can start to tap into communities that do honor yourself. And then you'll discover communities that are entertaining new thoughts that are in harmony with, I think, this evolving state of consciousness that I can't even put into words yet, but I just want to say thank you, because this podcast is a part of that. It's challenging limited ideas that people have entertained, and you're mm-hmm. provoking new thought, and you are provoking new change.
Yes. And don't close the door on someone that you feel has limitations, because we're all in different, you know, karmic journeys here, you know, as they would say in like Buddhism, shedding your karmic duty or whatever, like everybody has a different, that's very spiritual, but even from a life perspective, we all have an evolution, hopefully, to discover growing in this life.
Yeah.
And just because people have, you know, amidst the chaos of difference and, you know, different emotions and different beliefs and different feelings, I think it's important to take the time to try to explain a perspective, try to listen to someone else's perspective, but most of all is know that you're okay inside no matter what. No matter what, if someone has like, if the whole world, you know, turns into different thought processes than you have, that, you know, that will never happen. Number one, but like that this is your journey. This is your journey. It's your individual journey here on this earth. And it's yours to make it what it is. And it's yours to uncover the things that are holding you down, name them, discover them, get through them. And don't let it ruin you. Don't let it ruin relationships. Don't let it close your heart, most importantly, because I know that I was walking around with a closed heart. I was like, I'm really good. I'm good. I don't need a relationship with my sister. I don't, that society builds this family unit and I have friends and I have all that stuff. That was all just a bunch of bullshit for me to protect my hurt, to protect my, you know, the thorn I had in my tendon. So I built all this stuff. All this playing the victim. And when I really looked at it, none of that really mattered. None of it mattered. None of it was really even true. Yes, what happened to me was wrong. I'm going to validate that. And I have every right to feel the way I do. But for prolonged, to keep these, you know, someone would call it holding a grudge. I think it's a lot heavier than that. But, you know, to hang on to that for a long time is only hurting yourself. So we've got to let go of those things. It takes joy away from us. It takes living away from us. It takes new opportunity away from us. And so we've got to open our hearts, even when it hurts like hell.
Yes, yes. And the pain, I think, is one of the transcendent functions for growth.
Yes.
There is something through that pain. If we avoid it, we're not going to grow. But if you can create space and honor it and find the right support group and tools to help you manage that pain that doesn't feel so burdensome, the level of growth that is available to you on the other side is phenomenal.
It's phenomenal. I completely agree with that. I love that. And, you know, I always look at something like when people have life, like it's very easy for them. Like they're usually pretty boring, to be honest. You may have it easy, but like after an hour, I'm done. I'm going to go find someone more interesting to hang out with. I need someone who's really suffered, man.
Yes.
This
yes.
is the thing cutting it for me.
Yeah. I need a little bit more soft here. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh my God. Well, listen, I'm so excited. I did want to mention it just because I'm excited about the work that we do and we continue to do. We are holding a retreat. It is sold yes. out, but there will be more. There will be more retreats. And Sylvia, I just know, I don't even have to ask, that you're going to come on back each time. We need to work through some of these. And listeners, please, yeah. this mindfulness work. I mean, I'm going to give Sylvia the mic to just, you know, for those people who don't already follow her, to tune in to her and tap into all that she has out there for us in terms of resources and ideas and different ways to think and process things. And I just want you guys to do one thing today. If you don't do anything else at all, is just be kind to yourself, give yourself a break, think about those things that are hurtful and validate them inside yourself. Try to name something today if you can, and just really think about it, because it's all about, for me, I call him the one, or it the one. It's all about trying to get back to the one, finding a better connection, exactly, and doing it in this life where we can feel important, we can feel significant, we can, and by the way, you all are, every single last one of you have significance, have importance. Someone loves you. You know it's true. Even though you want to say nobody loves me and all that stuff, the woe is me stuff, I've been there. I know what it's like. And you only want to stay down there for a little while because it serves nothing. And I want to remind you of this one thing that I said to Dr. Sylvia on the last podcast that my girlfriend learned from her mom, that is fear, false evidence appearing real. They are phenomenons that we encounter as human beings, emotions like fear, emotions like uncertainty. These are all part of the human experience. But if you really tap into what's good in your life and what you do have going on for you and let that take over some of your thought process, alternatively, I think we have, all of us, a lot to be thankful for.
Yes.
All right. Well, listen, before I let you go, please, listeners, if you have any questions at all for Dr. Sylvia, or if there's something more that you want us to dig into on this podcast, you just go to heatherthompson.com and shoot me an email at heather@heatherthompson.com. This is the most important thing that I do in my life, because I've been through some tragedy. I've been through some pain, and I know for a fact it has only made me better. It has only made me stronger. It has only made me ready for more of what's to come. And hopefully I'll handle those things with that wisdom and with that learning. So that's some of the ways I'm finding my freedoms today. Doc, how are you finding your freedoms when you're going through these challenges, just like everybody else does? Doctors are humans too.
Oh, absolutely. I really do lean into my spirituality, especially if I'm experiencing any kind of fear. And one thing that you've made me think about, this fear as false evidence appearing real, mm-hmm. I think that comes from these belief systems, these limited ideas that we've entertained for generations and generations.
Yes.
And it's up to me to acknowledge these limited ideas of myself. And it's only up to me to challenge and change those ideas. And so if I can radically take ownership for all the limited ideas that I've allowed myself to believe about myself, then I can create that sense of power to shift my own narrative, to start creating the scaffolding to my preferred story and start to look at myself in a different way. And I think when you start to change the way you look at things, such as Dr. Wayne Dyer said, the things that you look at start to change. And so let's start with ourselves. Yes. Many of us have been looking at ourselves through this lens of limited ideas that have been passed down through our family systems and society, and we believed it. Yes. So challenge the idea that you have about yourself. Name learned helplessness and challenge yourself today to start creating a preferred story. How do you prefer to feel? How do you prefer to show up in your life? How do you prefer to experience your relationships? And just by starting with the what if question, I think that can entertain a new thought and entertain the possibility of change.
I love that. Hallelujah. Well, I love that. We're going to close with what if, and we're going to come back next week with who am I? I love it so much. That was a little inside joke, but this is In My Heart. I am Heather Thompson, your host. I am so thankful to my guest, Dr. Sylvia Kay. Can you tell folks where they can find you if they don't already follow you?
Absolutely. You can find me on Instagram at Dr. Sylvia Kay, or you can find me on the web. I have a website, people don't even use that anymore. DrSylviaKay.com. You can find me on my website there. And I have a podcast as well, the Dr. Sylvia Kay Show, and that's found on Spotify and Apple.
Make sure you tune into that, you guys, because she does this all day long on her podcast. And so we only get little snippets over here, but we're going to take each and every one of them that we can. We so appreciate you so much. Thank you so much to my guest. I'm Heather Thompson. We'll be back next week with another episode. Be sure to tune in.